Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevamos Daf Lamed Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. As we mentioned at the end of our previous shiur, we left off in the middle of a discussion. So, by way of introduction, all that we can recommend is having become very familiar with the previous shiur, our shiur from Daf Lamed Beis. On the side of the Gemara, you'll notice we have a Nosei Mivneh heading. A Nosei is the topic heading, Mivneh structural note. We also indicate that this structure and marking system will continue through till Amud Beis. There are Tshuvos, the house marking introduces responses, answers La She'ela to the question B'mai Komiflegi Rebchia Bar Kapora that we saw on Lamed Beis on our previous Amud. We saw three examples in which Rabbi Chiya and Bar Kapora argued, Rabbi Chiya claiming there were two offenses, and Bar Kapora claiming in the name of Rabbi, both in the name of Rabbi, that there was only one offense. So the question is, what's the basis of their controversy in each one of the cases? But my komifiki, the Gemara answers, Beisur Koilel Valiba de Reb Yossi. For those, of course, who are very familiar with our Shir of Daf Lamed Beis, these terms and names are familiar. The concept of Isur Kolel was already introduced, and how that operates, we'll see that as we go along the Gemara over here. And we saw Reb Yossi on Daf Lamed Beis, more specifically Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, in an argument with Rabbi Shimon concerning one act that carried with it multiple offenses. It's more specifically, we saw the case of Eshes Ach and Achos Isha. If one has relations with a woman that has both of those characteristics, how many offenses are violated? Rabbi Yossi mentioned two, and Rabbi Shimon says that only one. Ein Isser Chalal Isser. A second offense cannot be superimposed on a first offense, on an original label of prohibition. Rabbi Chiya Savar. We continue in our Gemara. Rabbi Chiya, who holds in the three examples that we saw on Lamed Beis, he held that there are two offenses. So he holds Rabbi Yossi Beisur Kolel Mechayev Tarti. The Rabbi Yossi, when it comes to an Isur Kolel, that type of offense where the second label of offense affects other items, and since other items are affected, we can superimpose that label on the original item of prohibition, and as such, two offenses are viewed as having been violated. Bar Kapora Sovar, Bar Kapora though disagrees, Lo Mechayev Ela Chada. That when it comes to an Isur Kolel, Reb Yossi does not acknowledge Isur Chal Al Isur. Umay Isur Kolel Ika Hacha, what is the Isur Kolel over here? So this is a long question. Take note of the structure. We're going to explain how Isur Kolel might manifest itself in these examples, but we're only going to be successful with examples 1 and 2 from Lamed Beis Amud Beis. When it comes to example 3, we're not going to find how Isur Kolel figures in. So, to explain the Machlokas Reb Chiya and the 3-point Machlokas between Reb Chiya and Bar Kappara using this analysis will not be successful. Hence, that will lead to a number 2 approach in trying to explain what are they arguing about, Rabbi Chiya and Bar Kappara. But until then, the Gemara struggles and tries to find where do you find Isser Kolel? Bishlamo Zar, the example of Zar Shishimesh B'Shabbos, a non-Kohen that did Beis HaMikdash sacrificial activity that involves Shabbos violations. That's called Zar Shishimesh B'Shabbos. Me'ikora, before Shabbos set in. Shori B'Malachov Aser Bavoda. A Zar is allowed to do malachos. Malachos are those activities when it comes to Shabbos forbidden, sowing and baking and planting and plowing, 39 different malachos. A Zar is allowed to engage in those things. The Aser Bavoda, however, he is not allowed to do service in the Beis HaMikdash. He's a non-Kohen, hence he's precluded from sacrificial activity in the Beis HaMikdash. Asyo lo Shabbos. Then Shabbos arrives. So the Zar that up till now was allowed to do Malachas, when it comes to Shabbos, Migu dekomitzar b'malacha, since he becomes usher in Malachas outside the Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos terms, Mitzar Nami Bavoda, that which was already usher, namely the Zar doing Avoda, it gains a new dimension, an additional dimension of prohibition vis-a-vis Shabbos. So that a Zar on Shabbos, if he puts sacrificial parts on the fire of the base of the altar, burning things on Shabbos is forbidden. So even though before Shabbos that action by the Zar was usher anyway, but since the Malacha prohibition affected other activities outside the Beis HaMikdash, the Beis HaMikdash is kolel, is included in the element of Shabbos violation. So as far as Rebbe Chiya is concerned, Rebbe taught him that Rebbe Yossi acknowledges Isser Chal al Isser, a second Isser. In this case, the Shabbos, the Isser of Malacha Shabbos, is able to be superimposed on the Zar, who was already usher in Beis HaMikdash activities. But now I know we're going to sound a bit repetitive, but the concepts are a bit abstract. This idea of Isser Kolel is present here vis-a-vis the Zar, who was usher anyway in doing things in the Beis HaMikdash, sacrificial activities in the Beis HaMikdash. With the onset of Shabbos, so other things that were mutter till now became usher. Burning meat outside the Beis HaMikdash on Friday would have been allowed, but now when Shabbos sets in, burning things outside the Beis HaMikdash becomes usher, so it becomes usher in the Beis HaMikdash as well. That's Isser Kolel. The next example, Balmum. This is the case of a blemished Kohen doing Avodas Beis HaMikdash in a state of Tumah. Meikora Shori Bachiv of Asar Bavoda. The blemished Kohen was, when he was not yet defiled, he was allowed to eat sacrifices, restricted only with regard to the offering of sacrifices. Itmilei, now this Balmum becomes Tomei. Even without his becoming Tomei, he cannot offer sacrifices. But now he becomes Tomei. Migu dekom mitzar bachila, since he becomes usher in other things, he becomes usher in eating sacrifices, where the element of defilement has relevance to something that up till now was allowed Mitzar Nami Bavoda. Tuma is superimposed on the Baal Mum as well. True, the Baal Mum was not allowed to offer sacrifices anyway, but since defilement was able to manifest itself in outside things, in other things, here we're talking about eating of sacrifices, it takes in, that's the word kolel, it includes within it, it takes in, it draws in also the Baal Mum doing avoda. So he's guilty of two things. Because of Isser Kolel, of course, according to Reb Chia's tradition he received from Rebbe regarding Reb Yossi. And the two violations are the fact that he's a blemished kohen doing service and the fact that he's a defiled person doing service. So we have successfully illustrated Isser Kolel with regard to the first two of the three cases Bar Kapora and Rebbe Chia were arguing about on Amid Beis, Amid Beis. Elo Malika, the case of the Zar Shocha Malika, the non-Kohen who ate a sacrificed sin bird sin offering, Bebas Achas Hu De Mishkachas Law, Beiser Kolel Lo Mishkachas Law. We understand that there are two violations, but the two violations set in at the same moment. It could very well be that in such a case, so there are two violations, but in an Iser Kolel, we don't see how that operates. Rashi explains in a more elaborate fashion. You'll notice that in the narrow lines of Rashi, a ways down from here, there's a star. And we're going to just read from that point. Ukshenimluka, when the bird was nimlak, when the malika slaughtering of the bird was done, v'nireis l'kohanim, and it became available to the kohanim, a kohen eats a slaughtered chatos ha'of, poka mino isur asoras mila, at that point the mi'ila prohibition expires, because when something becomes mutter, something that had been sanctified becomes permissible to kohanim, the pre-existing violation of mi'ila, which is the prohibition of benefiting from something sacrificed, from something sanctified, that expires upon the malika, becomes then fit to the kohanim. But at that moment, v'chayel olei iser zoros, the zar lo yochal, the prohibition of a zar from eating sets in. Up till that point, no one was allowed to eat from it. But now, the zar is not allowed to eat from it. It's a new eating prohibition, but it's specified regarding the zar, the non-kohen. The iser malika. And at that moment, it's also malika. Malika is another way of saying that it's a nevela. With regard to kohanim, so we saw that that prohibition is suspended. But if you're not a kohen, if you're someone that's not entitled to eat it in the first place, you would also have to contend with the fact that it's not slaughtered in a normal slaughtering way with a knife, but rather with the kohen thumbnail, as we described in our previous shiur. So the Isser Zoros of Zar Lo Yochal and the Isser Malika happened, they set in Be'isr Bachas Achas simultaneously. As the bird is being slaughtered through the Malika process, it's becoming forbidden to the Tzar, and it is becoming Usser as a Nevela, simultaneously. So we find the two violations in a Bas Achas fashion happening simultaneously, but Be'isr Kolel Lo Mishkachas Lo, we don't find it in an Iser Kolel fashion where it's a two-stage development of prohibitions. So what then is the analysis of the Machlokas Bar Kapora and Rebbe Chia regarding the three cases? Apparently the Gemara is working with a clear assumption that all three cases have the same, there's one thread that ties together all three cases. We're looking for one analysis that applies to all three cases, concerning which we will then see a machlokis between Rabbi Chiya and Bar Kappara. Elo komifligi, in the Gemara now, number two, house number two, be'iser, be'bas achas, valibad Rabbi Yossi. Once again, we're returning to Rabbi Yossi, and we're saying that Rabbi had taught Bar Kappara and Rabbi Chiya what Rabbi Yossi's opinion was with regard to Isurim, prohibitions, that two of which set in simultaneously. Rabbi Chiya Sovar, Rabbi Yossi be'isur basachas mechayev tarti. Rabbi Chiya is of the opinion that Rabbi Yossi, when it comes to two Isurim setting simultaneously, would hold the person accountable for two offenses. Ubar Kappara Sovar lo mechayev elo chado. Now, reference was made to Rabbi Yossi. Now, just to go over that which we said earlier, where did Rabbi Yossi initially show up? He showed up back on the Daf Lamed Beis Omid Aleph concerning the intimacy between, if you recall the examples of Reuven and Shimon, there were two brothers that were married to two sisters. Reuven married to Leah and Shimon married to Rochel. If Shimon would conduct intimacy with Reuven's wife, Reuven, and Leah, so Rabbi Yossi there spoke about two offenses: Achois Isha, wife's sister, and Eshes Ach, wife of brother. Two types of erva. Now, let's take a look at Rashi, Mechayev Tarti. Rashi that we're looking at is toward the end of the narrow lines. That which Rabbi Yossi said back on Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, that he's chayev for two offenses, kegoin shebo olav iser de'eshes ach ve'achlis isho ke'echod, where these two labels set in at once. And how in the world can Leah become usur to Shimon simultaneously as an eshes ach, as an an and achlis isha? In other words, like conventionally speaking, one issur would set in before the other. If you have two brothers, and if you say Shimon married Rachel, and then later on the Reuven marries Leah, if Shimon marries Rachel, at that point Leah is Achos Isha, it's Shimon's wife's sister. And then later on, when Reuven marries Leah, so Leah is also Shimon's brother's wife. That's very simple to follow. However, how can both labels, brother's wife and your own wife's sister, set in simultaneously? Umeshkachas lo, Rashi continues, says you can have this kagon deshavu shnei achim shliach lekadish deachoyas. The two brothers appointed one man as an agent to give the two women money. But if he is going to give the two women money, he's going to be giving one after the other. It's not simultaneous. The money, of course, is matrimony money, money with which he betroths the woman, making her an Eishes Ish. However, where's the element of simultaneity? So Rashi goes on. V'hein osu shliach lekabel kiddushin. The two sisters, Leah and Rachel, appointed an agent to receive on their behalf the money. Upoga shliach b'shliach. The brother's agent met up with the sister's agent. Brother's agent gave sister's agent the money. That's in one act, in one moment of money transfer. Both sisters become married to both brothers respectively. So there you do see the possibility of simultaneity regarding the two offenses, Achos Isha and Eshes Ach. So that is as far as Rabbi Yossi is concerned over there. The Gemara though here goes on, the Hocha. Well, let's just read again. We said Rabbi Chiya holds by Isur Basachas, Rabbi Yossi is Mechayev Tarti, and Bar Kappara Sovar lo Mechayev Elo Chado. The Hocha my Isur Basachas Ika Hocha. Here in the Machlokis Bar Kappara and Rabbi Chiya, Where do we see simultaneity with regard to each one of the examples? Now, structurally, the Gemara will introduce the cases and point out that you can explain this with regard to two of the examples, but we're looking for an explanation that applies to all three examples. So the Gemara goes on. Zar Shishimesh B'Shabbos. You want to see how you can have both setting in simultaneously with regard to a Zar, a non-Kohen who does sacrificial activity on Shabbos. He puts the animal parts, the sacrificial animal parts, on the altar on Shabbos. Kigon, the icy shtei Cyrus b'Shabbos, the havilu zorus v'Shabbos behadi hadadi. The shtei Cyrus, literally the two hairs, the two pubic hairs that introduce adulthood or maturity, upon which a person, and only at that point, is a person guilty or held accountable for mitzvah violation. So that prior to Shabbos, this person would not have been guilty of any offenses. He was still a minor. The hairs sprouted forth on Shabbos. So that on Shabbos, he became, and we should also point out that as a non-Kohen, as a Zar, before Shabbos, he wouldn't have been guilty because he was a minor. When does he become an adult? On Shabbos. So the element of Zorus and the element of Shabbos happen simultaneously with the emergence of the two hairs that emerge on Shabbos. The Havyalahu Zorus v'Shabbos b'Hadi Hadodi. The double liability sets in simultaneously. Whereas, just to repeat, whereas before Shabbos, he wouldn't have been guilty of being a Zar doing Avodah because he was only a child, and he wouldn't have been guilty of any Shabbos Malacha violations either because he's only a child. But adulthood being reached on Shabbos, at that point, both elements, both prohibitions set in simultaneously. Balmum Nami, the case of a blemished Kohen who serves in a state of defilement, of Shimesh Betumo. The same analysis as we said with Roman numeral number 1, Kigon, the icy Shtei Cyrus, the Itmi Lei. First, Rashi explains beyond the literal translation of the Gemara, he tells us that you're dealing with someone that was, as a minor, had become defiled. Oh, imagine a minor had touched a corpse. So he's Tomei Mace. However, let's say, that would have no halachic ramifications because he is still a minor. While he is Tomei, though, Tumas Mace, for example, is a 7-day event, 7-day phenomenon. While he is Tomei Mace, the two adult hairs, the two pubic hairs, emerge. So when the Gemara says the Aisi Shtei Sars V'Itmilei, it's a little misleading. V'Itmilei really goes before. A child who was Tomei, and in a state of Tuma, two hairs emerge. The Havile Balmum, the fact that he's blemished, the Tuma, and the defilement vis-a-vis service in the Beis HaMikdash, having halachic severity, set in Bahadi Hadodi, they set in simultaneously. Namely, before the emergence of the two hairs, as a Balmum doing, as a child, a blemished child, Kohen, doing activities, so he wouldn't be chayav anything because he's a minor. Likewise, as a defiled individual doing Beis HaMikdash activities, but he's a minor, he wouldn't be guilty. With the emergence of the two hairs, those two elements become, we'll say, problems. They become halachic reality simultaneously, both as a blemished individual and as a defiled individual. Inami, another illustration of Balmum Shishimesh Bituma happening simultaneously, Shechotach Etzboi Besakin Tamei, chopped off his finger. A person lacking a finger, a kohen lacking a finger, is a Balmum, and he did so with a knife that was Tomei. A Tomei knife is capable of reproducing its tumor upon the person that it contacted. So, as the knife was chopping off his finger, it was also having contact with the person. So he became a Balmum and Tomei at the same time. Let us point out that as far as Malika, we had Zar Sha'ocha Malika, that was the third example, that we already explained how it happens Bebas Achas. That the Iser Zoros and the Iser Malika happen as the bird is being slaughtered in the Malika fashion, simultaneously. It becomes an Avela, and the Iser of Zar Lo Yochal sets in, because it's at that point that it becomes Mutter to the Kohanim, and whereby the Iser Me'ila is removed, but a new Iser kicks in at that moment. At the moment that Malika is happening, the Iser of Zar Lo Yochal sets in. So that's already been explained as Iser Basachas. The Gemara asks, Bishlamo L'Rabbi Fia, things will work out. I can understand the Gemara through the position of Rabbi Fia. Ki asne l'didei aliba de Rabbi Yossi, when Rabbi Fia was taught by Rebbe, and Rabbi Fia mentioned that he was taught there are two offenses, so he was taught in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Yossi. Ki asne lebar kapara aliba de Rabbi Shimon, and through the eyes of Rabbi Fia, he understands how Bar Kapora could say you're chayav only one, because Rebbe taught the halacha in accordance with the other Tana, in accordance with Rebbe Shimon, who holds that when you have multiple averos, you're chayav only for one, even if they happen to be bebasachas. Elo la Bar Kapora. But from Bar Kapora's standpoint, if you view things through Bar Kapora's eyes, Bar Kapora, according to this, from house number two downwards, from as far as Bar Kapora is concerned, who said that Rebbe taught him according to Rebbe Yossi, Bar Kapora says that Rebbe taught me that with multiple averus there's only one violation, even though multiple averus were committed. There's only one violation for which the person is held accountable, and he taught me that in accordance with Rebbe Yossi. So would you say that through the eyes of Bar Kapora, Rebbe Chiya Shikurim Komeshaker, that Rebbe Chiya was simply lying? You see, the problem is that if according to Rebbe Yossi, who is more expansive, says that there would be only one offense, Rebbe Chiya would have no one upon whom to ascribe two offenses. So, according to what we are saying now, we can explain what took place in the controversy between Bar Kapora and Rebbe Chiya if we look at things through the eyes of Rebbe Chiya. But if we look at things through the eyes of Bar Kapora, we would have no choice other than to say that Rebbe Chiya was lying. And that's untenable. So we have to approach Rebbe Chiya and Bar Kapora with a new analysis. Ela komiflegi be iser basachas faliba de Rabbi Shimon. Now, here, things, we don't have to go through the exhaustive analysis we did before with regard to basachas, because we already demonstrated how you can have the three cases happening bevasachas. However, the difference in three, in the analysis 3 versus analysis 2 is here we're going to be looking at things through Rabbi Shimon. In other words, what Rabbi was teaching Rabbi Chia and Bar Kapora, two of his students, he was teaching them in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Now, we saw Rabbi Shimon back on Daf Lamed Beis Omed Aleph with regard to the Machloikis of using the example we cited before, the Shimon having relations with Leah, Shimon's brother's wife. Is there a problem of Achos Isha and Eshes Ach, or just one? In that presentation, Rabbi Shimon had said he's chayav only one. What happens when the two Isurim set in simultaneously? So we continue in the Gemara. Bishlamo the Rabbi Chia. I understand Rabbi Chia's position, who said he is chayav two, even though we're talking according to Rabbi Shimon. Komishtaba lafuke the Rabbi Shimon mechazke. Rabbi Chia's need for swearing, if you remember before we saw Kofatz, we saw this back on Lamed Beis, Omed Beis, where each one had taken the position. You saw the Loshen Ho'avoda. And so that numerous times, each time the Machlokas, Rabbi Chia and Bar Kapora appeared, they, Kofatz, Rabbi Chia Venishba, you saw that. You can see, if you look back on your marked Gemaras, you can see there's a squiggle underline that appears after Roman numeral 1, 2, and 3. Kofatz, Rabbi Chia Venishba, and likewise Kofatz, Bar Kapora Venishba, each one swore. Very, very strong language. So I understand why Rabbi Chia needed to swear in this strong language, because Rabbi Chia was introducing something unusual. Rabbi Chia was saying that even according to Rabbi Shimon, in the three cases we featured on Lamed Beis, Lamed Beis, there would be two offenses. And this was a departure from Rabbi Shimon's standard approach. Rabbi Shimon, in other cases, is mechayev only one. So Rabbi Chia had to swear to strengthen his position, whereby Rabbi Shimon was being, let's see, removed or transferred from his standard approach. His standard approach was to be mekel, to be mechayev only one. But with regard to these cases, Rabbi Chia said that Rabbi had taught him in the name of Rabbi Shimon that there would be two offenses. So he needed to swear to remove Rabbi Shimon from his standard approach of being mechayev only one. Elo labar kapora, loma lei lishtabui. But what was the need for Bar Kapora to swear? Now, according to Bar Kapora, even in an iser bas achas, where the two offenses set in simultaneously, Rabbi Shimon is mechayev only one anyway, and that's what we've seen Rabbi Shimon to having been said in the past, two offenses results in only one culpability. So why did Bar Kapora have to swear to emphasize his point that Rabbi Shimon would be mechayev only one? That doesn't represent a departure from any previous comments of Rabbi Shimon anyway. So the Gemara says, Kashya, that's a difficulty. That's a point of difficulty with regard to the need for swearing. Now, note, though, the opposite effect right now of things. Just before we said Bishlam Rabbi Chia, here we take an opposite approach, and the Gemara says Bishlam Bar Kapora. On the other hand, like leaving the issue of the swearing aside, regarding another matter, things are more understandable through the eyes of Bar Kapora. Bishlam Bar Kapora, ki asne Rebbe Ledidei, aliba de Rabbi Shimon. when Bar Kapora received a tradition of one offense, there was two violations resulting only in one offense, so Bar Kapora was being taught in accordance with Rabbi Shimon. Ki asne the Rabbi Chia, and when Rabbi Chia was taught that there are two violations, so through the eyes of Bar Kapora, what Rabbi Chia was talking about or was saying, he must have been saying Aliba de Rabbi Yossi, that with regard to the opinion of Rabbi Yossi, there are in fact two violations. Elo le Rabbi Chia, but now looking at things through the eyes of Rabbi Chia, now, through the eyes of Rabbi Chia, even Rabbi Shimon, who generally speaking is a minimalist, here Rabbi Shimon is saying that you're chayav two, here where the two isurim set in simultaneously. Even Rabbi Shimon, who is ordinarily a minimalist, says you're chayav two. There's no one left to say only one. Because once again, even Rabbi Shimon, who is the minimalist, says you're chayav two with regard to the Isur Bas Achas. So certainly Rabbi Yossi would say two. So through the eyes of Rabbi Chia, Bar Kapora Shkuri Komeshager, is Bar Kapora lying? Because according to Bar Kapora, with the onset of the two averos, the two sins setting in simultaneously, Bar Kapora claims there's only one chiyuv, only one element of culpability. According to whom would that be? So is he lying when he says one? Omar loch Rabbi Chia. Rabbi Chia says no. That's not how. That's not what is responsible for Bar Kapora's comment. Rather, and you will see here, the Gemara explains in detail how Bar Kapora, again through the eyes of Rabbi Chia, how Bar Kapora could have come to say one. So Rabbi Chia explains, ki asne Rabbi Ladidei, when Rabbi taught Bar Kapora, tarti liftor asne. Rabbi Chia, Rabbi taught Bar Kapora two examples. He taught the example of Zar Shishimesh B'Shabbos, and he taught the example of Balmum Shishimesh B'Tuma. He taught those two examples as being chayav only for one offense. The Isur Koilil Asne Valiba de Rabbi Shimon. And he taught those examples in the Isur Koilil fashion. Now, if anyone needs a reminder of that, so we saw that in the top of Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph, how you have Isur Koilil with regard to those two activities, Zar Shishimesh B'Shabbos and the Balmum Shishimesh B'Tuma. Those two offenses, the second offense will set in through a kolel fashion that we already explained. However, Rabbi Chia adds that which Bar Kapora was taught, that one will be chayav for only one offense, that was taught in accordance with Rabbi Shimon. That only in the case of an Isur kolel, Rabbi Shimon says chayav one. V'chazio Bar Kapora lezar shocha malika. Bar Kapora noted in his mind the case of a zar that eats malika, which is similar to the previous issues, which were Kodshim related, which were sacrificially related. And how are they related? Not only by the fact that they're in the realm of Kodshim, but it's there are two offenses that are happening that exist together. He's a Zar, and he's also eating Nevela. So Bar Kappara thought about that on his own. The Aidi Didamya law, and since the case of Zar Shachamalika is similar to the other cases, the Zar She'ovad Abishabes and Balmu Shavad Bituma, Onvo Bahadayu, he mixed them together. In other words, he took the case of Zar She'ochamalika and in his mind categorized it together with Balmum She'ovad Betumo and the Zar She'ovad Bishabis. The Ayin Ba, and then he looked into it. He looked into the case of Zar She'ochamalika, the Lo Ashkich Elo Bevasachas. And Zar She'ochamalika, as we explained in our Gemara earlier, that sets in, the only way the two set in is in a simultaneous fashion. The Isser Zorus and the Isser Malika set in simultaneously. That's as far as Zar She'ochamalika, but again, Bar Kappara was, since he got onto that track of thinking, and he was thinking at the same time about Balmum She'ovad Betumo and Zar She'ovad Beshabes, the Sovar and Bar Kappara concluded Midaho Bevas Achas, from the fact that Zar B'Malika is a double offense that sets in, though simultaneously, Honami Bevas Achas. The cases of Balmum Betumo and Zar Beshabes are also situations where they set in simultaneously. And we explained earlier how that could be. That's what the appearance of the Shtei Cyrus of the two adult pubic hairs. Umida Hanoch Liftor, Hanoch Nami Liftor. Now, Bar Kappara had heard from Rebbe regarding those two, the Balmum Betumo and Zar B'Shabbos, that according to Rebbe Shimon, they're chayav only one. So just like they were chayav only one, and now in Bar Kappara's mind, they're chayav only one, even if they happen simultaneously. Hanoch Nami Liftor. This also is going to be chayav only one. So that as far as Rebbe Chiya is concerned, Bar Kappara wasn't lying. Bar Kappara was taught the idea that for a double offense, there's only one. But as far as the truth of the matter is concerned, as far as Rebbe Chiya is concerned, this idea of being chayav only one is restricted to the case of an Iser Kolel, and according to Rebbe Shimon. Bar Kappara, though, let's say, took liberties in his thinking. Yes, it's true that he heard one, and that's why Bar Kappara said one. But he said one with regard to even when the two offenses set in simultaneously, and he got to that conclusion through considering on his own that Zar She'ochamalika must be characteristic of the other two offenses, and just like Zar She'ochamalika is an example of two offenses setting in simultaneously, the cases of Balmum that She'ovad Betuma and Zar She'ovad Beshabbos, they also represented cases of simultaneity, and as far as Bar Kappara is concerned, even then there would be only one offense. Meisvei. Here the Gemara raises a question. Notice that it's a long question. Zar Shishimesh B'Shabbos Ubamum Shishimesh B'Tumo. These two examples are quite familiar to us. Yeshkan, in each one of these examples, what we called one and two, We continue with the same numbering. One, Mishum Zoros or Mishum Shabbos. That is Zar Shishimesh B'Shabbos. There are two offenses. There's the fact that he's a non-Kohen and the fact that he's doing the Malacha on Shabbos. And with regard to the second example, number two, you say Umishum Balmum Umishum Tuma. Divrei Rabbi Yossi. And the Balmum Shishimesh B'Tuma, there are two violations, and that's all according to Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Shimon Oimer Ein Kan Elo. Again, the numbering is consistent to the opening of the source. With regard to case one, there's only Ein Kan Elo Mishum Zoros. With regard to case number two, Ubalmum Bilvad. So that's Rabbi Shimon's opinion. Only one offense, that if you have a Zar Shishimesh B'Shabbos, as far as Rabbi Shimon is concerned, as far as Molochus and Shabbos are concerned, is totally suspended. There's only the problem of Zoros. And with regard to the Balmum Shishimesh B'Tumah, the laws of Tumah were suspended. With regard to public sacrifices, there remains only the problem of his being a Balmum. Now we have a source that has two of the three cases that we saw back on Omid Aleph. The Ilu Malika Shaira. The case of Malika, namely the Zar She'ocha Malika, that's left out of this Machlokas Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon. Now, the case of Malika, Zar She'ocha Malika, those are two problems, Zoros and Neve Law, and they happen simultaneously. That's the only possibility with regard to that particular example. Now, it was left out of this source. Leman Shirei. Rashi, across from here, Leman Shirei, Klomar, Man Minayhu Moide Bo Deloboi Leflugi. We have Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon. Someone is going to concede to someone else regarding the case of Zar She'ocha Malika. So that if one concedes to the other, you don't have to teach it in a source that deals with controversy, with points of controversy. So regarding Zar She'ocha Malika, that was left out. Lamanja, according to whom was it left out? Or for whom was it left out? And here we have the double underlining to highlight the stages of analysis. So Ilemo L'Rebbe Yossi, if the case of Zar She'ocha Malika was left out, that Rabbi Yossi would allegedly say that he'd be chayv only one. Well, that's far-fetched. Hashta Rabbi Yossi be'isur koilel mechayev shtayim. Mind you, Rabbi Yossi, when it comes to isur koilel, which was a weak form of suggesting second Isser being superimposed. And yet, even though the Isser Kolel analysis is a rather weak method of having a second Isser superimposed on an original Isser, and even so, Rabbi Chiya says, even in Isser Kolel, there are two offenses. When the two offenses happen simultaneously, where you really can't choose one over the other, so Mibaya, would I need to tell you that would I need to tell you that Rabbi Yossi would say two? Of course there would be two offenses. So the absence of Zar She'ocha Malika from this source where there's controversy to suggest that Rabbi Yossi on that point would concede to Rabbi Shimon, forget it. Rabbi Yossi wouldn't concede to Rabbi Shimon with regard to Zar She'ocha Malika where the two Isurim of Rabbi Asacha simultaneous. Elolav the Rabbi Shimon. So rather, we have to conclude that the absence of Zar She'ocha Malika from this source is simply because Rabbi Shimon on that point concedes to Rabbi Yossi that we would be chayev too. So then, if in Isur Basachas, Rabbi Shimon is Moide, so where is their machlokes? Ubisu Kolel hu depotar. It's only with regard to the case of Isser Kolel, where the second Isser is going to be, let's say, superimposed through the Kolel method, there Rabbi Shimon exempts. Avol be Isser Basachas Mechayev. But in the case of Isser Basachas Mechayev, that's Rabbi Shimon would be Mechayev too. Tiufta Dabar Kapora. Tiufta. This would appear then to be a refutation of Bar Kapora's stance. What was Bar Kapora's stance with regard to Isser Bas Achas Alibo de Rabbi Shimon? So if you look back at house number 3, that means go back to Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph, and there the Gemara said that Komifli be Isser Bas Achas Alibo de Rabbi Shimon, wherein Bar Kapora said there would be only one offense. Here, by the absence of Zar Shocham Liku, which is an example of Shnei Isurim, two Isurim that set in Babasacha simultaneously, Rabbi Shimon is conceding to Rabbi Yossi that you would be Chayev two. So that is a refutation of Bar Kapora in our answer number 3, back on Omen Aleph. The Gemara now continues looking into the example of Zar Shishimesh B'Shabbos, trying to understand what took place. On the side of the Gemara, we have this as our no sour topic heading, Zar Shishimesh B'Shabbos Chayev. We say that a non-Kohen who does sacrificial activity on Shabbos, he's considered in violation. B'mai Shimesh, what did he do in practical terms? So the Gemara asks, and the question lasts a couple of lines, B'mai, e b'shchita, if the Tzar, the non-Kohen, slaughtered a public sacrifice on Shabbos in the Beis HaMikdash, and that would be considered an offense, that's not true. Shchita b'zar k'shera. A non-Kohen is entitled, is allowed to slaughter sacrifices. The e b'kabola v'hilocha, and if it's regarding the subsequent or the succeeding or subsequent activities in sacrificial offering, the receipt, kabola, receipt of the blood in a receptacle, and the halacha, the carrying of the blood to the Beis HaMikdash upon which it eventually will be thrown, the blood is, blood as applied after halacha to the base, to the mizbeach. Nevertheless, those activities of kabbalah and halacha, receipt and carrying, tiltal bi'alma hu. It's mere movement of it. That does not involve any Shabbos violation. E behaktorah, and if you'll suggest it's the burning of the sacrificial parts on the mizbeach. Now, burning is certainly something that's prohibited on Shabbos, but nevertheless, how can Rabbi Yossi claim that that would be a Shabbos violation? Von Rabbi Yossi, havora lilav yotzisa. Havora is an exception to the rest of all the melachos of Shabbos, insofar as the rest of the Melachos Shabbos, 38 of the 39 Melachos Shabbos, result in a capital offense, and hence court execution. Havara, on the other hand, is different. It's considered a negative offense, Isur Lav, without a capital penalty attached to it. So to suggest that the Zar Sha'ovad Shishimesh B'Shabbos is considered in violation of Shabbos by having burnt the parts of the sacrifice on the Mizbech, but according to Rabbi Yossi, Havara is the example of something that would be a non-Shabbos capital violation. The Gemara answers. And then here you'll notice there are two answers. Number 1 and number 2 follows later on. Omar Rav Acho Bar Yankiv. if you want to know what's the case of Zar Sheshimesh B'Shabbos that would carry with it two offenses, namely Zoros plus Shabbos, it's a very, very specific example. B'Shchitas Poro Shel Kohen Gadol U'Chedivrei Omer Shchitas Poro Shel Kohen Gadol B'Zar P'sula. We're talking about Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol brings a special personal type sacrifice, personal or Kohen related sacrifice called a par. It's a cow offering, more specifically a bull is offered, and unlike the slaughtering of other sacrifices, when it comes to the Shechitas Par, the slaughtering of the par of the Kohen Gadol, it cannot be done by a zar. And slaughtering is a melacha on Shabbos. It's a one cannot slaughter animals on Shabbos. So if you are not the right person for doing the slaughtering and you're doing it on Shabbos, that would be considered a violation of Zoros and a violation of Shabbos. The Gemara asks, "Ihochi ma'ir yazar?" If that is the example that the Reb Chiya and Bar Kapur are arguing about, the Zar She'ovad B'Shabbos was very specifically a Shabbos that Yom Kippur, Shabbos Yom Kippur, slaughtering of the par of the Kohen Gadol. Why emphasize Zar? My iris, why speak of my iris Zar? Why speak about a Zar? Afilu Kohen Hed Yot Dami. Even a regular Kohen, anyone outside of the Kohen Gadol is unfit for slaughtering that sacrifice. That sacrifice must be slaughtered by the Kohen Gadol, the high priest alone. So how is it that we're describing Zar Sheshimesh B'Shabbos when in fact it's not a problem limited to a Zar? It would include a Kohen Hedyot, a common Kohen as well. The Gemara says, you're right, but the term Zar is still accurate. Shezar etzloi ko'amar. It meant it's unfit for him. And it's not, the term Zar then is not a reference to the standard use of the term as non-kehanim, but rather it means someone who is not fit to do it. It's strange. Zar literally has to do with strangeness, foreignness. It's foreign to a Kohen Hedyot to slaughter the par of the Kohen Gadol. So we can stick right now with Rav Acha Bar Yankiv's example or answer to what it was Zar Sheshimesh B'Shabbos. How was that violated? Maskif lo Rav Ashi. Midi chatois kotoni, oi lavi kotoni. Rav Ashi is unhappy, we'll say, with Rav Acha Bar Yankiv's hesper, with his explanation. When the Gemara suggested that Zar Sheshimesh B'Shabbos might very well have been haktora, the Gemara rejected that on the grounds of Rabbi Yossi saying, well, haktora doesn't result in a capital offense, nor would it result in multiple, nor would it result in, if done b'shogeg, a korban chatos. A korban chatos, a sin offering, is brought upon a Shabbos violation that otherwise, if done intentionally, would carry with it a capital offense, a capital punishment. So on the grounds that that Havora doesn't carry with it a capital punishment, it therefore is not the example. Rav Ashi says, that's no reason for rejecting the Zar Sheshimesh Shabbos' Haktorah. Does their original machlokes say multiple chatos, that for Zoros and for Shabbos? Does it say that? Or does it say lavi? Does it speak about negative commands? Elo isuri bi'almo kochoshiv. all that Reb Chiya and Bar Kappa were referring to were violations, without being specific of what penalty accompanies the violation. So when we speak about a zar, Shishimesh B'Shabbos, it could be anything that he is doing that has some type of Shabbos element of violation, even if it's not a capital offense. So that what we are essentially describing is a zar doing things that that he, as a zar, should not be doing, and he's doing it on Shabbos, doing activities that should not be done on Shabbos, regardless of the penalty, the Shabbos penalty that accompanies them. L'may nafgamina, what difference does it make, halachically speaking, how many offenses there are? If you're telling me now that from the Shabbos side of things, we're not necessarily speaking about something that carries with it a capital offense, which would result in, let's say, multiple chatois or Torah level violations, but you're talking simply about things that the Tzar should not be doing. I think that you have to add here, with an element of Shabbos violation, even if it doesn't carry with it the Chiyuv Chatos, what practical nafgamina does it have to us? What practical legal ramifications does it have that he's considered a multiple violator? The answer is Lekovro Bain Rishoyim Chamurim, to have him buried amongst the more severely wicked individuals. That if a person is guilty of multiple violations, Zorus plus Shabbos, eventually upon his demise, maybe through natural causes, he will be buried amongst people that are equally wicked. Before we continue with the new Mishnah, we glance at the side under our topic heading. We have a nose say, Shnayim Shekidshu Noshim Vizchafut. We'll speak about two people that married women. They gave money in betrothing women, making each woman an Ashes Ish. She's considered a married woman now. And they got switched around. Kamo Averos Yecholos Lios. How many offenses, how many sins could be described under such events? The Mishnah. Shnayim Shekidshu Shtei Noshim. Two men married two women. U'bashas Knisasan L'chupa Yechlifu Et Shelzeh Lazeh Et Shelzeh Lazeh. And when they entered chupa, chupa represents the, literally it's a canopy, but it's the stage at which the couples will now engage in intimacy to consummate their marriages. However, there's a switch around of wives. Hare Eilu Chayovin Mishum Eishas Ish. Well, each man that has intimacy with the other one's wife is then guilty of Eishas Ish, having intimacy with a married woman. V'im Hoyu Achin. If the two men happen to be two brothers, and each brother is having relations with his other, with its brother's wife, then there's a problem. Mishum Eishas Ach. V'im Hoyu Achoyos. And if the two women happen to also be two sisters, that where you have two sisters married to two brothers, then you'd have a problem of Mishum Isha El Acholsa, which in other terms means wife sister. That one is prohibited in having intimacy with one's wife's sister. V'im Hoyu Nidois. If there were menstruant women, Mishum Nida, there would be that offense as well. So you can have a maximum of four sins with the one act of intimacy. Umafrishenos Shloisha Chadoshim Shema Muboros Hain. If the mix-up was discovered, so we separate them from their proper husbands for 3 months. We don't allow them to engage in intimacy because of our fear that they might have been impregnated by the by the first men, their non-husbands. And if they were impregnated by them, the resultant child will be a mamzer. So we want to identify the woman as whether she is or not pregnant. And that can be determined only after the passage of 3 months without having intimacy with her real husband. And after, within 3 months, or at the three-month point, if we have isolated, separated her from her real husband, and she shows signs of pregnancy, we'll know she's pregnant with a mamzer. If 3 months go by, and she hasn't been with her husband because we separated her from him, and she, after 3 months, shows no signs of pregnancy, so she was not impregnated. Vim hoyuk tanois sheinan ruyos leleid machzirin oison miad. If the women featured in this mishnah that were switched around happen to be minors, they're children that are not fit to become pregnant, so then that issue of suspicion of mamzerus doesn't exist. So we can have them be returned to their proper husbands immediately. This will be explained at greater length in the Gemara later, but it basically says that a woman, if she was associated with the kahuna and she had been with another man as a married woman, so she can no longer participate in eating of truma. The Gemara asks on the language of the Mishnah. There's an arrow on the side. You can align this with the arrow above where the word hichlifu appeared. Hichlifu grammatically means there was a deliberate, the two men switched their wives. You take my wife and I'll take yours. Hichlifu. Midi bereshi askinon. Is the Mishnah interested in analyzing what the halacha is with regard to wicked individuals? The su ha the tani rebchia. And furthermore, I have a further problem. Rebchia has a tanaic source, a brisa, which is a, we'll say, a commentary or an elaboration on that which is taught in the Mishnah. Rebchia's brisa says regarding that which the Mishnah taught. The Mishnah taught there were four offenses. Nominally speaking, is right by way of name. There was Eishes Ish, Achos Isha, Eishes Ach, and Nida. Four offenses. Now, those four offenses, when committed by four people, four times four. So Rabbi Chia says, Harei kan sheish esrei chatois. There are 16 sin offerings that would be brought. So as far as our Mishnah is concerned, combining with Reb Chia's source, our Tanaic literature is telling us that when the wife switch takes place, 16 sin offerings will be brought. If it was deliberate, like the word Hichlifu suggests, upon deliberate sinning, no korban, no sacrifice is brought. And yet, as far as Reb Chia is concerned, our Mishnah features the bringing of sin offerings. Omar Rav Yehuda, Tani Huchlefu. Therefore, Rav Yehuda says, so you have to change the language of the Mishnah. The word needs to be changed. And rather, read it as Huchlefu. They got switched. Hochi Nami Mistabra. Now, here we've dashed underlined this expression. The Gemara's focus from now till the end of the Omid is going to be trying to justify the change of language. On the side of the Gemara, the Nosei Mivneh heading, we feature a house shape. Nisyonois attempts lahochiach shiyesh lishanois hodiktoni hichlifu anoshim, that we have to change the language from that which it says hichlifu, the mashma b'mezid, which implies something done deliberate, lehuch lefu, to they got switched around, which is something that was done by mistake, something inadvertent. The diamond will highlight the expression havlotas, means to highlight ve'i b'mezid. So Rav Yehuda in response to the Gemara's question, first of all, we're talking about the wicked, and Reb Chiya's source that says there's 16 sin offerings, Reb Yehuda felt that we should change the language of the Mishnah from Hichlifu to Huchlifu. And in order to strengthen that point, the Gemara says, Hochinam Minstar, but it's also logical, it's also likely that it should be changed. The Katani Seifa. It says in the Seifa of the of our Mishnah, the very Mishnah itself, it says, Im hoyuk tanoi she'enon ruyos lele machzirin oison miyad. If the women in question were minors that aren't fit for childbearing, so we return them to their husbands immediately. V'ibe meizit misharya. If illicit intimacy takes place deliberately, is a woman allowed to go back to her husband? Absolutely not. A married woman, and that's what we're speaking about in our mission, women that are married, if a married woman has intimacy with another man other than her husband, knowingly, deliberately, bemazed, she is henceforth forbidden to her husband forever. Not only the husband, but also the paramour. But here we're focusing on the husband. She's forbidden to the husband. So how could the Mishnah teach Machzirin Oson Miyad if it were bemazed? Therefore, we justify Rav Yehuda's change of expression from Hichlifu to Huchlifu. The Gemara says, Ha lo kashya. Without literally translating that phrase, we'll say that is not a convincing point. In other words, the fact that the Mishnah says Machzirin Oson Miyad, we return them to their husbands, does not pose a challenge to the expression Hichlifu, where something was done deliberately. The reason for that is Pituye Ketana Oynis Ninu V'Oynis Bisrael Mishra Shari. A minor that is seduced. Now, seduced means that she was convinced to engage in this intimacy. So, as a result of seduction, she was seduced. She was convinced, and there is an element of deliberateness that's mazed. However, the halacha does not regard the decisions made by a minor as being reliable. So that the seduction of a minor, making her supposedly mazed, deliberate, has the status of a rape victim. And a rape victim, when it comes to a woman who was married to a Yisrael, non-Kohen, a woman like that, a married woman that's raped, is allowed, Mishrashari, she's allowed to go back to her husband. So the fact that the Mishnah says that if they were ketanos, we would send them immediately back to their husbands, does not prove that the Mishnah is speaking about something inadvertent. It might very well be talking about something that was mazed. So you can't prove the huchlifu expression from the din of the Mishnah concerning the ketanos. Ela, dikotoni, rather, based on this. It says, "Mafrishin osam shloisha chadoshim shema mumboros hein." We separate the women for 3 months from their husbands, and here we're not talking about we're not talking about minors. We're talking about gedolos, and we separate them for 3 months to establish whether they're pregnant or not. Ha'lav muboros, and if we discover that they are not pregnant, sharyon, they are mutaros, they go back to their husbands. Ve'i b'mezid mishari, and if the adult woman had illicit intimacy deliberately, would we come to that conclusion that she'd be mutaros, she'd be allowed to go back to her husband? Elolav shmami no, rather, from here we can conclude Huchlifu, that the switch in the Mishnah was not deliberate, it was inadvertent. Shma mino. This is in fact conclusive. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.